Choice Tunes, every second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 2pm, with Alan Collier introducing a special guest each show where they reveal their selection of favourite tracks. Tune in to discover what music influenced their lives. Only on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
I like the sound of that.
Welcome, Choice Tunes. Now, we know what you... if you don't know, what we do is we get a guest in. We get them to give us some of the music that's played an influence in their life. Not their favourite music, but things that when they hear that music brings them back some great memories. And they're going to tell us all about why they chose that music. Now, today I have with me a guy. His name's Chris Hodson. Now, a lot of you will know Chris because he's appeared on a number of the stages in the non-professional theatre in Lilydale, down at 1812, but up at Ferntree Gully and quite a number of places. But also he's got another reason why I wanted to talk to him. He's also written a number of plays, so we'll be finding out more about Chris and what makes him tick. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Alan. Nice to be here.
Oh, great to have you along. Chris, we're going to get down to what you're doing now and writing, but we want to start right off at the very start. Where were you born, Chris?
I was born in a little place called Ashby de la Zouche on the border of Derbyshire and Leicestershire in England. A good many years ago.
Well, I'm not going to ask you how long ago.
But I don't mind.
We don't care. But obviously, at some stage, you came to Australia. So were you brought up over there or what happened?
I was over there until I was 14. Yep. And then my parents were 10-pound Poms.
Yep.
Came out.
Landed at a station pier?
No, we flew. We were one of the first 10-pound Poms that got their... flights paid for. So, we arrived in 1963. Well, that gives me away.
Doesn't matter.
Age away. And we were deposited in Maribyrnong Migrant Hostel.
And how long were you out there?
A week.
And then where did you go?
Well, my mother and my sister were very upset. In fact, for that week, I think they didn't stop crying.
Wanted to go home?
They wanted to go home. It was a big adventure for me. I didn't care. So, we had a box of addresses that my parents had been given of people that knew people in Australia. So we had no option but to try and get out of this horrible hostel. Yep. And we pulled a name out of somebody in Perth, and we had no idea where Perth was, so once we found out, we threw that one in the bin.
Yep.
And the next one was we pulled out someone in Dandenong, and so we looked them up, and the short story is that we went there, they were in the process of selling their house.
Oh,
so
God.
We bought their house, and we lived with them for 6 months, and they lived with us for 6 months while their new house was being built. And and I was put in Dandenong Tech.
Yeah.
And I sat next to a boy and became friends with him, went home. He had a sister, Paulette, and I've ended up marrying Paulette. So, essentially, I tell everybody that I won her in a raffle.
Chris, when you were going, we don't worry about school because everybody goes to school. What was your first part-time job, probably before you started full-time work?
My first part-time job was in England while I was on my bike delivering papers. It was what I look back on as slave labour these days. And we had to collect the money every Friday night from the people who most often didn't pay. And that all came out of my wages until they did pay. So it was, yeah.
Chris, let's start on the songs. The Beatles, She Loves You. Why did you pick that?
Well, when I came out here in 1963, the Beatles were the group of the day. And I had a Beatle haircut and I was totally into the Beatles. And the first record I ever bought was She Loves You.
All right, let's listen to it.
She loves you, yeah.
So, Chris, at what stage did you decide that you had this friend of yours and he had his sister, Paulette? At what stage did you decide, I think I might ask Paulette out?
Oh, it was probably a few months later.
Not years.
No, a few months later. We actually went out with one another while... Oh. I'd turned 15 and she was 13. And when I mean going out, it was me going out to her place and sitting watching television with her parents, I think. We sort of knocked about together for about 12 months and then we went our separate ways and then we got back together again when I was about 19.
Fair enough. All right, so now you've had your first part-time job overseas, which didn't pay much. What was your first full-time job, Chris?
When I was about to leave school, because I was in Form 5 and didn't want to go on to Form 6,
yep,
because I wasn't doing particularly well, I had no idea what I wanted to do, no idea. And a guy came to the school rabbiting on about PMG. I thought, yeah, why not? So I joined the PMG and stayed there for many, many years.
Did you retire from the PMG? Or
no, I didn't. I took a package in 1993. I took a package.
So what did you do with the PMG?
I worked in a telephone exchange. I can't say I was the most technical person, and I sort of fumbled my...
You're a technician.
I know, and I fumbled my way through for years and years. And can I say, I'm not the most enterprising person, but I never was able to or had the confidence to take the step and leave. And I was always good at job interviews and... what's the Peter principle, where you're promoted two levels above your competency? And it wasn't really, I haven't had a happy work life, really.
So what did you, after you took the package, Chris?
After I took the package, my wife took a job promotion. She was a personal assistant secretary type thing. She took a job promotion and I took the package and I said, well, I'll do home duties, which lasted about 8 months. So I got a job with a packaging company around the corner and I did that for 10 years, driving, became deliveries as well. So I drove the big white van around the city. And, then a mate of mine gave me a job at... When my dad died, he turned up at the funeral and I hadn't seen him for years. I went to Dandy Tech with him and he had a business of FPOS machines, fixing FPOS machines. So he said, you could do that. And he said, you've got a technical background. Anyway, I did that and I did that for another 8 or 9 years and he left the business and I left the business and then I got a job as a gardener in Poets Lane Receptions up in the hills and I was a gardener for many years until I retired.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
Julian a Pacemaker's, You'll Never Walk Alone.
This is more a moving memory. My grandparents, who I love dearly in England, came over to stay. And they stayed for nearly 12 months. And when they went home, I was, I was very upset about that. And we saw them leave from Station Pier.
Oh, yeah.
And in those days, when the big ocean liners left, everybody had streamers across the side where you held on until the boat pulled away and broke them. And there was a group of young people doing the rites of passage on deck. And they were singing You'll Never Walk Alone, which was very moving, and it was the last time I saw my grandfather in particular.
Was it?
And even today, when I hear that song, I might even have to run out of the studio now. It tears up.
When you walk through a storm, the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver sound
Chris, we like to ask the big, hard questions here. What was your first car that you bought?
A Mini Miner.
A Mini?
A Mini. Little Mini, little screaming Mini. Yeah. I even had a T-shirt that said screaming Mini across the front.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
it a good car?
It was. It was a terrific car. I bought it secondhand. Yeah. My dad had a hand in it, of course.
Yeah.
But, and then he persuaded me to buy a new car.
Yep.
Which was never as good as the Mini.
And what did you buy?
A Morris 1100. and even today when we've got the, you know, the Minis that are out now, yep. I say to Paulette all the time, I want to buy one. Don't think I ever will.
Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer.
Right. Not that I'm a big Bon Jovi fan. Yep. But my youngest daughter was a big Bon Jovi fan when she was about 9. And she desperately wanted to go to a Bon Jovi concert.
Right.
And they were in Melbourne and they were at the old Olympic swimming pool, whatever that's called these yep. days. And they were on there. So I said, I'll take you along.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I went with her. I virtually sat on my own because she just raced down the front and screamed along with all the other kids. And I was sitting next to speakers and my chest was thumping back and forth with the noise from the thing. And I just remember sitting there feeling, oh, I wasn't that old, but I'm feeling an old fart.
Compared to the rest.
And John Bon Jovi was swinging out over the audience. And I remember that incident every time I hear it.
Let's play it.
We'll be right back.
Now, Chris, there's a couple of things that I really want to get onto now. We've found out quite a bit about your life, but I've also, I know you act because I've seen you on stage in non-professional theatres at 18, 12 and that. What got you into acting?
Well, there's a story.
We haven't got all that time.
Yeah, that's all right. I just turned 40.
Right?
40,
yeah.
40, and a group of friends, we had a dinner party, as you did around those times.
Yep.
And there was four couples went round the table, and we were all pretty much close to or had turned 40.
Yep.
And we started talking about things that we always thought we'd like to do and had never got around to doing, which is probably not uncommon. And I... when it came to me, I said, well, I'd always wanted to parachute, you know, jump out of a plane.
Yeah.
And but I couldn't think of anything else. And then I thought, oh, when I was at school, I always wanted to be in the school play and had never been picked to go in the school play. So I said, no, maybe that, but I don't know whether I'd go on stage now. And then about a month later, I'd been out and jumped from a plane. I went ahead and did it. And then one of the women that were at the party, she rang me up and she said, there's a theatre company in Clayton looking for someone to play a small role in a play. Why don't you go?
Yeah.
They'd started rehearsals and they were obviously really desperate. So they said, yeah, and it was on Golden Pond.
Oh, yeah.
And just a minor part of the... of the daughter's boyfriend, the dentist. So I did it, and I've seen a video of it. It's bloody awful. Anyway, I've since played during, just before COVID, I played on Golden Pond, the main role, at 18, 12. So, So that's how I got into it.
So out of all the roles you've done, because you've obviously done a number, what's been your favourite role?
I've played, probably the favourite one I've played is one I won an award for. I won a Lyrebird Award for playing Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman at Bats in Cranbourne. And that would probably be one of my favourite roles, although I played in a play in the bakery at the 1812, Mr. Bailey's Minder, and I enjoyed playing in that too.
That was a good show.
So, yeah.
All right, The Lonely Shepherd. Why'd you pick that one?
We're travellers. We've done a fair bit of travelling, and in 2003, I think it was, we were in Ecuador, and the trip we were on, we had to cycle down this mountain, down this hill, with volcanoes surrounding us, and it was a most picturesque trip. And we stopped at the bottom and had to walk down this path that was had all the local flora down there.
Oh, yeah.
And we went into a little hut, which was sort of like a cafe, and they gave us hot chocolate, and we sat down there, and they were playing The Lonely Shepherd, which is played on Pipes of Pan, and
let's listen. Thank you. Chris, you're talking about your acting and the acting that you've done in the non-professional theatre. What about, now I know that you've written a number of shows. First of all, what got you into writing?
I was a member of Sherbrooke Theatre Company, which no longer exists. And we were looking at one-act plays we could do to take to the one-act play circuit.
Right.
And we read play after play after play, and they were rubbish. And I said, oh, I could write better than this.
Famous words.
Famous last words. So Sue Moon, who was part of the theatre, she said, well, have a go. And I did. And the play that 1812 just did recently was that one-act play, which I'd further extended into a full play.
Which was called?
Which was called Phantom Call.
Yep.
And it was about a séance. So, yep. And it started from there, because...
So how many plays do you reckon you've written, Chris?
Oh, gee. It would be in the 20s, probably.
Has it?
Yeah.
Where do you get your inspiration for when you're writing?
It's a very good question that I don't have a very good answer for.
Right.
I'll probably sit down to write a couple of ideas at like dot points.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden an idea will come and I'll just start. But all of a sudden the ideas come out and I virtually write a play straight off. Particularly if it's a small play,
yeah.
Like I've been doing 10-minute plays as well, and they virtually write themselves. I just keep typing, and I don't know where that comes from.
Gee. Yeah. All right, John Farnham and help.
We were talking offline about how I've struggled with depression over the years for various reasons, and in a very deep depression point that I was in, and it was affecting my wife as well. And some years later, we both said how much John Farnham's version of Help meant to them at that time, meant to us at that time, because we both needed help. And I needed help with my grey matter, and she needed help on how to help me. So,
which is terrific. All right, let's listen to it.
When I was younger, so much younger than today, thank you.
Now, Chris, you've just appeared in a show in Lilydale, haven't you? Was that?
It's called Fracked.
Yeah.
Which is, for those that don't know, it's fracking is getting oil and gas deep down in the earth, and it causes a few environmental problems.
Yep.
And this is a show about that. So, yeah.
And you've got one coming up in the new year, haven't you? And you wrote this one, didn't you?
I did. It's three one-act plays put together that are linked, hatched, matched and dispatched about a birth, a marriage and a death. And they are linked by the character of a vicar who I'm going to play.
Yep.
So.
Well, you should be able to play that well because you wrote the part.
That's right. Well, that doesn't always mean I'll remember the lines.
I was going to say.
So, yeah. So that's on in February, I think, at the Basin. Yep. So, that may be my last play.
What, to appear in you? But you said that a few years ago.
I'm known as the, the John Fardamore, the Nellie Melba of amateur theatre.
I remember you saying, I saw you on Facebook and you said, this is my last show, but that's about three shows ago.
It's become a local joke, but I think...
Right, Pavarotti, why'd you pick this song?
Right, I have a grandson who lives with us. My daughter lives with us very happily, and she has a son, Wade, who has Down syndrome.
Yep.
And he's a high-functioning kid with Down syndrome, and he is absolutely gorgeous. Yep. And he's...
And they're very affectionate too, aren't
they?
Yeah,
yeah. And he and I... are extremely close, and we have a very similar sense of humour. Whether he's got his sense of humour from me or he was born with it genetically, I don't know. But we have a lot of fun, and we sing together a lot.
Do you?
And even from a baby, he had a bit of colic and stuff like that, and I can remember I used to play Nessun Dorma, Pavarotti's Nessun Dorma. Oh. And we used to pat him, cup our hands and pat on his back, and he would make noises like he's singing Nessun Dorma, and we'd sing Nessun Dorma together, and we have sung it for years. We sing it going to school even.
Let's listen. So, Chris, what's coming up for Chris Hodgson? Do you see yourself doing a whole lot of plays this year and next year, or a whole lot of writing, or where do you see yourself?
I'll probably continue writing. I haven't written for a few years now, but I've started up again.
Have you?
I keep making the decision that I've given up acting on stage.
I've heard that before.
But I think the Basin one probably will be the last one, because I don't have the same confidence of getting the lines out on stage as I used to have. No.
But in this case, you should know all these because you wrote them, didn't you?
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
So, I thought it would.
No. Well, I can fumble through them and say, well, I've changed them.
So, you must be a director's nightmare if it's your own show.
Yeah, well, Alan Burrows just directed me in Fracked, and he kept saying, you know, Chris, lines. Yes, Alan, yes. So I did have a dry spot on stage too that lasted about 15 seconds that probably felt like 15 hours. But yeah. So it's it shakes me up when that happens, yeah. And I'm thinking, concentrate on your writing.
Chris, you've obviously got a couple of children because you've talked about the daughter, yep, that lives with you. Have either of those got any inclination to be on the stage or...?
None whatsoever.
All writing?
No. My eldest daughter, who Wade's mum,
yep,
who lives with us, she's over COVID, she developed a talent, well, discovered a talent for painting, and she paints acrylic and does wonderful pet portraits and has developed a business, which is so successful, she's given up her job. So.
And what about your other daughter?
Daughter is, they live over in Macedon. I have two lovely grandchildren over there. And she's a masseur and very involved in the local community and set up a community house and all that sort of thing.
Nothing to do with entertainment?
No. We thought Samara might end up on stage because she was very much into that while she was at school, but she hasn't.
And what about your father or mother? Any involvement with theatre?
No.
So you sort of came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, out of left field.
And you've been very involved in both acting and writing, but it hasn't rubbed off, and nothing rubbed off to you, and you haven't rubbed off to the children.
Well, Wade is an actor. We've tried to get it. There's a show on in town at the moment called Christmas Carol, and it was out here last year, and he auditioned for part of Tiny Tim. And he was, you know, shortlisted. Listen, if you like.
Chris, unfortunately, I've got to go. No, F.R. Words. David, words.
Words don't come easy. I mean, after what we've just talked about, I think it's pretty obvious where this comes from. The words come easy when I'm writing, but not so much when I'm on stage. So this is very suitable to finish off with.
Thanks very much for being part of Choice Tunes, and we wish you well in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
You believe it. my head in